Doug with us today. Doug is the pastor of, as I said, University Baptist Church. How long have you been at University Baptist in Minneapolis?
12 and a half years.
12 and a half years. And you're sort of at the heart of all this hubbub in the American Baptist churches, aren't you, in many, many ways.
Well, so are you.
The Association of Welcoming and Affirming Baptists. Many of you don't know the unique history that Doug has with this church. So today, I just wanted to bring Doug here. You were yesterday over at Denison with the Hilltoppers, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So you were involved in the Hilltoppers when you were a student here?
I was. It was the first audition class. So the Hilltoppers were founded in 1978, and I was a student here starting in the fall of 1979. And so we were the first, I was one of the first people to audition for the group. And it's still going strong 35 years later.
And so you had a reunion.
Had a reunion. There were about 69 of us here from all over the generations, and we did a generations concert where there were different groups from each generation singing different things. And I knew a lot of the words and some of the notes, but I make no guarantees that I could actually sing them anymore.
Well, when I heard that Doug was coming to Denison in Granville, I thought, "Oh, Doug, could you please come to church?" And he said, "Sure." And I said, "Oh, can you do the sermon?" He said, "Oh, okay." And I said, "Oh, can you also lead the children's time?" And he said, "Oh, okay."
Sure.
I really appreciate you being here. Mm-hmm. It was a gift. I just wondered if you could share with folks for a little bit about why this church has a special place in your spiritual journey, first of all.
Well, actually, a lot of you probably don't know that my grandparents met here. They were missionary kids. My great grandparents. One set was American Baptist missionaries to India, and the other set was American Baptist missionaries to the Arapaho and Kiowa in Oklahoma. And they sent their kids to boarding school here in Granville, and they met here and got married and all that kind of stuff. That's the only way I got into Denison. It wasn't my SAT scores or anything like that. It was because I was a affirmative action, you know, person.
Yeah, sure.
being a legacy. My mom also went here, and I think I'm like the 68th person in my family to have gone to Denison.
Wow.
But ministers, you know, skip like four generations, you know. So,
okay.
You know, my great-grandparents were missionaries, and there was no ministers after that until me.
Wow.
I really didn't. I started coming to church here every once in a while I was a student. But I worked here at the university after graduating because I didn't know what I was going to do with my life. And so decided that it would be kind of fun to hang out in Granville for a while. So I worked in the student life office for 3 years. And then really became very involved with this church at that time, and went to Nicaragua for the first time with people from this church, and the Parajon family, Gustavo and Joan, were actually, as well as David and Laura, were actually commissioned from my home church in Cleveland, Ohio.
Oh, interesting.
And so, and of course, Gustavo was a student minister here, and David was a student here as well, and so I got to know them well. But when it came time for me to go through the ordination process, I went to Union Theological Seminary thanks to Dave Woodyard. I wouldn't have gotten there without him either, so that's another connection. When I went to the ordination process, I really had really kind of developed who I was as a Christian really here in this community. I discovered politics when I was in college. You know, I only knew that I'd heard the word capitalism. I didn't really know what it was until I took my first sociology class in college. I knew that communism was bad, but I didn't know anything about it. And kind of really realized the role that the church could have in liberation movements. And Marx's criticism of the church, I think, rang true to me. I was at one of the other student ministers who was here as a Denison student many years before that was Sharna Southern. And Sharna, when I was working at Denison, she came back to I came back to Cleveland to visit family, and we went out to a bar, and I got evangelized by her at a bar. and she said she was, because she was getting ready to go off to the Nicaraguan-Honduras border to pray along the border, because it was when the Contra War was big. And I kind of knew the Parajones and all this kind of stuff. And I said, well, I can understand you being a physical presence there, but why would you waste your time praying? And she said, well, Doug, don't you realize that the whole Old Testament is a story of the liberation, people's liberation from slavery? And I said, really? I'm kind of growing up in the church, never really heard that. So, yeah, it's in the Bible. You should read it sometime. And then she said, you know, didn't you realize that Jesus' whole ministry was one of social justice? And I said, really? You're always standing up for the outcasts? I said, wow. But yeah, there's actually a real connection between social justice and Christianity. And so I came back to the church here and really realized that and saw that really actively here in this congregation. When I went through the ordination process, I again had joined here as an associate member and kept my full membership in Cleveland, but really kind of discerned my call here at this church. And so I went through the ordination process with the Columbus Baptist Association. We were part of the American Baptist Churches of Ohio back then, Ohio Baptist Convention. And there's several steps in the ordination process. I won't go through the whole thing, otherwise we'll be here till 3 o'clock this afternoon. But they asked me, so I was talking about my call, I talked about Nicaragua and all this, and they said, you're talking about wonderful, great things, Doug, but what do you think but there are international issues. What do you think are the five most important domestic issues the church ought to deal with? And I said, well, I'm living in New York City right now, because I was at Union Seminary. I said, well, I'd have to say what I see, and I see homelessness, hunger, racism, sexism, and homophobia. And the guy was sitting on the couch, he kind of moved away from me at that point. And he said, you mean fear of homosexuals? And I said, yeah, I mean fear of gay men and lesbians. And you know. And then the next hour was spent talking about what I believed about homosexuality and the such. And they passed me on to they reluctantly passed me on to the next level. Went through several of these different levels, presented my ordination paper, and each time they kept asking me about homosexuality. And it wasn't in my ordination paper, but it was the hot button issue way back there in 1989. It was before the Association of Welcoming and Affirming Baptists even existed. Your congregation and other congregations were part of the American Baptist Concern for Sexual Minorities back then. But in the chapel over there, we had my ordination council here on a Sunday afternoon in June of 1989, and there were 27 or 28 people there, 20 from First Baptist Granville, as what it was called back then, and 7 from a church in Alexandria, I think, and 1 from East Baptist Church in Columbus, and when it came, and again, the questions were about homosexuality. Wasn't in my ordination paper, presented my ordination paper, wasn't in there about that. And when it came time to vote, the vote came down as 20 in favor, 7 against, and 1 abstention. And so we went and made the plans for the ordination service we're going to have here a couple months later. I got a call from George Williamson, the pastor back then, and he said, Doug, we got a problem. It was about 3 or 4 days later. He says, somebody who had voted against you in the ordination council looked up the bylaws of the association and found out that that your ordination council was conducted in violation of the bylaws, and so the ordination council has been nullified. And I said, really? And he said, well, what are the reasons? He said, well, first of all, it was the invitation letter went out by the from the host church and not from the clerk of the association. Okay, the second reason was that it was moderated by the moderator of the host church, Ken Klatt, but not by the president of the association, who wasn't even there. Okay, that was the second thing. But the third thing, and here's the real key, was that each church only gets 3 votes, and so one church voted for me, one church voted against me, and 1 abstention. So it was a 3-3-1 tie. So I then had to go to decide what to do. And the church was really a wonderful support during this whole thing, and were you know, really, really, really behind me. And I think I was kind of the person who was doing all the speaking, but it was really on behalf, I think, of the congregation here and what we had discerned together about the place of life and ministry. I went back to I came back to another ordination council a couple of weeks later. This was held at, I think it was First Baptist Church Columbus, maybe University Baptist. I'm not quite remembering. And this day, it was 90-something degrees in July. And there were 37 delegates from 17 churches there. And we held an ordination council in with the bylaws and everything like that, sent out legally and all that. When the votes came down, it was 14 for, 17 against, and 3 abstentions. And I was denied ordination the second time. First one time was nullified, second time was denied. And I remember Ken using very wonderfully colorful language that we were all feeling. No, believe it or not, please remember. they wouldn't bring me back into the group because they thought it would be too embarrassing for me and the such. And so they sent me away, and we kind of licked our wounds for a while. And a couple of days later, we went to the Baptist Peace Fellowship Summer Conference, which was held at Keuka College in 1989. I was doing music for that. And George, at that time, was the president of the Peace Fellowship. And he said, "Well, the Ohio Baptist can't ordain you, then the Peace Fellowship ought to ordain you." I said, "Well, George, that's not how it works, you know." I had to tell him about what Baptist polity was, you know. And he says, "Well, fine. We'll call it a commissioning." And so they did a commissioning service there for me to a ministry of peace and justice. And Jack and Claudia were there, and Tom and Patty, and all sorts of people that were going to be part of the ordination service that was going to be held here. We did a bit of the liturgy that was there, and then had me kneel down, and then 300 people came by and laid hands on me to commission me to a ministry of peace and justice, because I had stood up for a justice issue, and because I had discerned that here in this congregation, and we were all a part of that. I started the entire ordination process over again in the First Baptist Church of Greater Cleveland. Used the same ordination paper, and passed the ordination council. George came up and preached the ordination service, and a lot of people here from First Baptist Granville were there, and that set me off on this trajectory. Homosexuality was not going to be my issue. You know, justice is my issue, and the gospel is my issue. It just happened to be one way that it manifested itself at that time.
And now you get your name permanently listed in the official history of the American Baptist Association of Welcoming and Affirming Baptist history timeline on their website.
Oh, is that right? I'm on their timeline.
You're on the timeline. He's on the timeline.
Go Wikipedia.
Well, you know, it occurred to me that there's a real vulnerability, and you have experienced this yourself, of coming into a group and being told, "Well, you know, you're not our kind of people. You don't fit here. You know, we're interested because of X, Y, or Z. You know, you don't, you're not the kind of person we're looking for. You don't know the history of our church, or you don't know exactly how we do things," and that experience of being kind of pushed out. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me that, you know, there's a decline of people in churches all around the country. Church membership's going down around the country. And it seems to me that kind of exclusivism, of kind of pushing people away, happens in more churches than we'd like to admit.
It does, and it doesn't happen very formally. It happens very subtly. It can happen very subtly. And it's a sad thing. I think people are looking for authenticity. And people are looking for real ministry and mission. You know, I was looking at something on the internet the other day. It talks about all the reasons that people don't come to church anymore, and it's because of the music program, or it's because of the the people aren't friendly enough, or something like that. But really, if we just change our music program or do some slick marketing thing, we'll get all the young people to come to church, you know. And you know, young people are smarter than that, It's not about the slickness. It's about authenticity. It's about doing something that engages you. And if you are in a community that that supports each other and that is that accepts each other warts and all, that's something that is going to be attractive, and it's what the church really ought to be doing.
Yeah, interesting. Sometimes, you know, we don't want to admit that church is a place where we can bring all of who we are, mm-hmm. all of our baggage, mm-hmm. all of our blessings, pile it all up together and say, okay, now let's work together, even though we know this is all here together. Mm. I think there's a lot of times when, like, for example, we're having an involvement fair today. There's opportunities for different people to be involved in new things. And there's kind of a reluctance sometimes, I guess, I would feel this too, if I was a person who hadn't done X or Y or Z before, to think, well, I'm not, maybe they're not going to, if I join that committee or if I say that I might be willing to do X or Y or Z, I'm not going to be let in. What advice do you give people who feel like, ooh, you know, rejection's a bad thing. I don't like that. You've been through it.
It's not any fun to be rejected, of course not. And we always have reluctance to do that. My daughter, who's 17 now, has something on her planner. It says, "You miss all of the pitches you don't swing at." Hmm. You know. I mean, there's all these. You can never quite succeed if you don't try, is basically what she's saying. I think there's always a church within a church. You know, Carlisle Marney says you need to find your church within a church, and so find those small groups of people that you know have your back, and do something that you find feeds your spirit. Our church in Minnesota. When I started off there, during the interim time, they had a streamlining task force, you know, and the streamlining task force was all about the structure of the church and how to change the church, you know, to make it more streamlined. But what people really called the streamlining task force was the burnout committee, you know. So how can we deal with our burnout? And I realized that you know, people were serving on these boards that they really didn't want to serve on, but they needed to do it because their constitution said they needed to do it. And so you needed to find people that were doing it. And I said, you know, I think it makes sense to let things just stop happening if nobody feels called to doing it. And so I think that burnout happens when people aren't having their spirit fed. And so find those places where you might find your spirit fed. Find those people with whom you might find your spirit fed. And you'll be a lot happier doing what you do. You don't do things out of guilt. Do things out of blessing. Do things out of things that are gonna feed your spirit and make you a more whole person. Make the community a whole community. That's going to be something that's ultimately attractive and ultimately fulfilling. Otherwise, it's just drudgery. And nobody wants to be drudgerous.
Yeah, right.
Drudgerous? Is that a word?
Drudgerous.
Yeah. It's a new word.
Well, I appreciate your authenticity, Doug. Mm-hmm. Everybody can tell that when you're talking to Doug Donnelly, whether you're up at Denison or at Peace Camp or right here at our church, you're the same guy, very honest guy who has been through some tough times, stuck it out, has been an example to a lot of us who are younger clergy, and we appreciate all the work that you've done and the continual source of joy and blessing you are to the whole church.
Well, thank you. It's great to be back here.
Thanks.